Cream Ray, your host at the One Soccer Nation podcast. Today I have the pleasure of interviewing Stuart Wolfenson. Stuart is the Director of Strategic Partnership at Real Madrid Los Angeles. Stuart has generated $3 million plus in international sales and partnerships, $5 million in sports partnerships, and is a sports and fan activation expert. Stuart, thank you so much for taking the time today. How are you doing?
Thank you, Kareem. Happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday. So what is Real Madrid Los Angeles?
Well, Real Madrid Los Angeles, as we're commonly known as a peña, which is in Spanish, is a rock. We represent a passionate community of Real Madrid fans. We're based in Los Angeles, and we are the second supporters club in the United States, and we are one of the largest in the world, and we are part of a very engaging community of Real Madrid fans in North America. We have more than 20 clubs from coast to coast. And one of the things that puts us apart really is that all of us have a deep connection with a club that's so far away, which is Real Madrid. So that's who we are. It's a community united by the love of the game and love of the team. And for those, Real Madrid is renowned worldwide as one of the most accomplished clubs in the history of sports. And we have more than 2,200 teams, supporter clubs across the world, and we are one of them. And it's incredible how this approach to the game from a fan perspective was embraced in our city by MLS teams, Major League Baseball, NHL, which, you know, it recognized not only the love that we have for the game, but it also recognizes us fans.
Absolutely. That's so amazing. So how did this opportunity come about to be able to host these events for Real Madrid?
Can you repeat again?
Oh, I was asking, how did the opportunity come about to be able to host these events for Real Madrid?
Well, actually, it came out of a situation, and when 2010 was the World Cup, I was here in Los Angeles, and I started hosting parties. Just we would start meeting at a local bar just to follow Spain. So one day, when we were in the quarterfinals and we were in the semifinals, I said, if we go to the final, we're going to have a party at my house. So incidentally, I told my wife, we're in the finals, we're going to have a small get together. So by the time in those days, there was no giant screen TVs, everything was square. And by the time the game was about kickoff, it was 125 people at my house watching this game. And I would say three quarters of us were Real Madrid fans. So you could imagine in the pool celebrating, you know, more than one of us thought we should have a fan club. That's what we need to do. We need to continue this. So I knew Peñas, what they call it, from Barcelona. That's where I lived for most of my life. And I wrote to them. I said, I want to do this. And that's where we are, where I met Elisa and six others, like a blind date at UCLA while the team was training. And we signed the papers right there. So it's kind of like a blind date going into the marriage 12 years later.
Wow, that's amazing. You said you mentioned you lived most of your life in Barcelona. So how and why did you go over to Los Angeles? Why was Los Angeles attractive to you?
Well, first of all, I did my undergraduate here. I lived here with my mother. I did my undergraduate, and my very best friend, when I was a kid, I would always, my family would travel a lot for business. So I lived between Buenos Aires and Geneva, and I would always stop by Madrid. So my family's Spanish, and my grandparents were Spanish. So I always would stop in Madrid on my way to Geneva, and I met my wife, and I always tell this story. She made me an offer I couldn't refuse.
I wonder what that offer was. That's amazing.
It was a transfer you would not believe. The amount of money that on the transfer was incredible. So I just couldn't say no.
That's amazing. So football culture is huge in Madrid, Spain. And from you coming from that football culture versus North America, being in America and Los Angeles, it's completely different. And it's still growing, in your eyes and perspective, what is the biggest difference between soccer in the US versus football in Spain?
You and I have something in common that we were both players at one time, and you played in Europe. I played in Europe as well, and I played in the United States. One of the uniqueness things is that football in Europe is extremely part of the culture, right? And you mentioned that. I think it all started to change. When I started to play, and we started, number one, winning is everything in sports, and that established this. The United States, and professional sports, winning is everything. And when you start winning, you create culture along the way, and you create people. But I remember back in Barcelona, I met the organizing committee that, I helped a little bit with the organizing committee that came to Barcelona to see how it was, because they were organizing the 1994 games. And one of the things they said is they realized that in order for you to be successful, you have to establish that culture of football, and it starts with your children. And I think the moment that you started cultivating that culture with children, is just naturally grows. I mean, not for nothing we call the beautiful game, right? It's a beautiful game. It's simple, it's easy, and for parents to see children evolve in something so simple, I think it's part of the reason why the culture is evolving. You have to have the base, but also you have to have a professional side to it, so that they have aspiration. And I think slowly, the professional, the USL, the MLS, slowly they're reaching that gap. So, as soon as you get your culture, and you have games, then you begin to create that fandom, that fan culture of being part of it, is being together. The most incredible thing about football is that it's a great place to build a community. It's a powerful thing. So once you build community, everything comes together. A little bit how you are approaching, One Nation. It's a community. So I think there's a lot of powerful things that are there that are very unique about the game, and slowly we're aligning it. And the fact that there is now players are able to play in Europe, their players are able to come back, and players can bring their experience. It also helps to bring the culture and to raise it up.
I love that. Community is everything in and everything in the world, especially sports. And one of the two powerful vehicles I see that really bring people together is sport and music. So those are really two powerful tools. I mean, vehicles. With saying that, as a multilingual, you speak multiple languages, which is amazing. With your extensive experience in international channel sales and partnerships, Could you share with us some key insights into how you navigate cross-culture relationship management to drive revenue growth, particularly in football or soccer?
My first lesson is the most important one that I ever had, and this was early on. I grew up in many places, and I had to understand culture as a result of it. Language was the first one, because if you can communicate, then all the barriers go down. And this is why football is so incredible, right? You have 12 guys on a field. Sometimes they don't even communicate with each other, and they don't even know their language. You can have Swahili, you can speak French, and football unites, right? But the most important thing that I remember is early on, where I worked on a multinational company back in Spain. They were in direct marketing, and they had an issue with trust and understanding the community. If we speak in our community, the local market had an issue of trust and understanding what we were all about. And we discovered through a survey that our PR company did that sports was an incredible means of acceptance. So we started to engage. We realized how powerful sports were and how much of an engaging tool. And in this case, it didn't really matter what kind of sport, because the athlete was known as a brand ambassador, and automatically was a situation of acceptance automatically, because they said, hey, he's an athlete, he's committed, he has valued, and if he trusts the company, so should I. So what I did is my approach was based on three key components that are very important: respect, understanding, and adaptability. So I always put myself, because I'm as you mentioned, I'm called multilingual, multicultural. I really put myself in that particular culture, on the nuances of each market, to really understand and to leverage those skills to really communicate effectively at their level, not from up far above, which is the mistake that most of us make, but really from the level of the locals. And building that trust has been really vital to really expand, and understanding those business practices, those preferences. Don't think of them, don't take them for granted. That's the word I wanted to use, so that you really can create true mutually beneficial partnerships that allow you to drive revenue. And in the case of sports, really provide fan engagement and branding along the way. And I've been very successful that I've really been able to do some unique things throughout the world.
That's amazing. I've seen, through video some of one of the events that you threw, and you got a lot of people there, and it was really nice to see what you were able to pull together. With saying that, how many languages do you speak? You speak like four or five languages, right?
I speak five languages, and I get in trouble with another two. So, yeah.
Which are they? English,
I speak
Spanish.
Spanish. I try to speak English sometimes. Spanish, English, Italian, Catalan, French, and Hebrew. I get in trouble every once in a while. But French, I spoke with my father-in-law and mother-in-law, because I don't speak Hebrew. So I do speak, but I don't want to say I speak, because I speak like I'm an Indian. So I get in trouble all the time.
Yeah, and then if you know how to speak Spanish, then basically you know how to speak Portuguese too, no?
Well, I think there's something, I'm glad you say that, because I have a challenge with that, because when I'm speaking Italian and Portuguese are much closer than you think. So sometimes they're speaking to me in Portuguese and I answer to them in Italian because my mind cannot make it up. I have more challenges with those two languages than speaking, for example, Catalan and Spanish. But once you have the base, it's incredible. I always tell everybody, if you want to be successful, just learn a language. Because the moment you can communicate with people, those barriers of entry are down. And I'll share something. The other night, I have an aunt who's Chinese, and my daughter heard that my aunt was trying to speak Spanish and Hebrew. So she started learning Chinese because she said, you know what? I'm gonna do it back. I'm gonna get back to her. So I heard her speaking Chinese. So this is how important languages are in the world. And this is again why football is so beautiful. It's the only sport where you don't need a language. You can communicate, and you can unite. It's so powerful.
So beautiful. You're inspiring me to really learn how to speak other languages because I grew up with my grandparents. They're Egyptian and they speak Arabic. So I grew up listening in Arabic and I went to Egypt back in 2020 and I really picked it up because I was in the environment for a month. So I fully understand Arabic, but and I could respond to it with certain words, but putting a whole full sentence and having a full conversation is not there yet. But you're really inspiring me to really pick it up. Because I feel like language is such a lost thing now in our society, with like English being the mainstream language. And I feel like just my perspective that language is being lost per se. But yeah, it's really cool to be able to speak multiple languages and then do business in other countries and be able to communicate in their language will enable you to do business internationally easier.
Yeah, much easier, much easier.
Yeah. With saying that, your role as the Director of Strategic Partnerships at Real Madrid Los Angeles entails significant responsibilities, including business development, financial planning, and media relations. How do you approach evaluating potential sponsorships or partnership expansions, and what criteria do you consider most essential in such assessments?
That's a great question, and I view it in a twofold. Los Angeles is being so dynamic. I mean, United States in general is a melting spot. So a melting pot, not as it's a spot and it's a melting pot. So when I evaluate or when I approach this is we created a community, and we when we talk to somebody who wants to get involved, first of all, they have to be an active part of the community. And when I evaluate, I prioritize three things that it's a must alignment. First of all, understand if they have any challenges. And because remember, that's how I got started as a result of a challenge that I needed to find a solution to that challenge. Understand the value, the brand values, and really comprehend the objectives that they have, the strategic overall objectives that we have, so that the brand can be part of the audience. And they can be an active part of it. So financial stability is very important, but also the potential that we have on a long-term collaboration is just as important. Because when you get into a relationship like this, this is not a race, it's a marathon. It's almost like saying this is not just a one game, it's regularity, 36 game season, and it's very important that you have regularity along the way. So the vision, if I have to share a vision, is to make sure to blend storytelling, because the brand has a story to tell, with fan interaction. Especially when you if you think about it, fans in Los Angeles are not in the stadium. I mean, 98% of, and I would say 99.5% of all fans of a team will never set foot on the stadium. That's the reality. If you look at it, you have 2 million fans, and the stadium has 45,000. It's impossible. And if you're a sold out, it's even more impossible, especially with Real Madrid or Barcelona, or most of the big clubs are completely sold out their season because that's their priority. So, as we mentioned before, as football, sports being such a universal language, it creates tremendous community ties. So, what we say is, think about this. Every match is a story. And every fan is a storyteller. So do you want to allow your brand to be part of that story? And to have the fans be part of that loyal, unifying message, then this is the place for you. And we have done some incredible things, as you saw, in a very unique way to have, I'm sorry,
I think you need some water. You need some
to
water.
have, for example, the paella parties with the tourism of Spain to allow culture to be part of, because at the end of the day, football is culture. So it's, I think, if we look at historically, football has done full circle, right? A full circle from the beginnings in England to where it is today, where it's really at the beginning it was only played by the haves, and the have-nots would watch, and then you bring the have-nots and you bring them together and allow to unify. So I think it's very, very important that branding and culture come together, and you allow the brands to be part of the culture in a very sublime way.
Culture, you've mentioned culture a lot. It's very important. The US is growing into that culture. I'm interested to know what your perspective is within US soccer culture and how it's developing because of the 2026 World Cup. I mean, even before that, the Copa America that's coming up in June. So we got some really big events, and maybe I'm not too sure where the news is with the possibly a women's World Cup in the US, but I mentioned two big ones, Copa America and the FIFA 2026 World Cup. What are your thoughts and how the US is building up and the development of American soccer culture?
It's interesting because I think that this will allow to really put the culture, bring it back to the forefront again. Because if you think about it, United States, it united, it's a melting pot of cultures. And I'm going to be biased in what I'm going to tell you. I think if I was FIFA, I would change everything. I would say every 4 years, every 8 years, you have to come to America, because historically we are the land of opportunity, and people, we have so much culture. We're such a melting pot. And I think that would help us to really unify things. So I think as we are emerging, those who were part of the original, those who were the part of the pioneers are allowed to enter the executives of the game. And those who played, those who got it, those who were injected with cultures, those who saw, I think it will create tremendous opportunity. And what I even see much more important is the game, if you think about it, the game was a game that was one-sided on the male side, but the fact that it allows the women's to so rapidly expand to really level that up to where really football or soccer is a really an all-around game where you really now it involves everybody. It's so powerful because it allows you to have your daughter, your son, both of them to participate, the family. So it creates an energy that I cannot see in any other sport. This is why they call it a beautiful game. I mean, you have women today who are influencers in the game to have followers just because of their approach to the game, and it really doesn't matter. So when the people talk about equality in football, I think indirectly it's there because the moment the base is playing it, slowly you will raise it up, and the equality will just come by itself. Just let it go. Let it flow, as I would say.
Yeah, let it create its own life and live out. And like for me personally, I don't, put on a game and every weekend and watch games. I try to catch up on highlights, but there's been a few times where I was at the gym and I see women's football in England being on the TV, and I'm like, wow, like it's definitely come far. And Europe is obviously far ahead on both the men's and women's, but to see a filled out stadium for the women's game is amazing. In my eyes, it's they're playing the same game, but it looks different. And in my opinion, and it's so cool to now see the support that the women's have today that they should have had before, but now we're seeing it, especially in the US too. We're seeing that it's growing. Now, the USL Super League, which is now a sanctioned Division One as the NWSL, I've listened to a few of their interviews, and they want to enable create more jobs on the pitch for women and on the front office. So it's just really cool and amazing to see that, and that's what we're also working to. I'll share this on the record too with you. That's what we're working on too at One Soccer Nation in regards to podcasting. I'm working on getting a female podcast host to interview more females on the front office and on the pitch. So that's been a cool process, and we might have to change the blue to pink for that one. So it's really exciting. With saying that, how do you feel about the women's side and how it's evolving?
I think that the women's game in the United States, and let's say North America, and the game in Europe, it's almost like comparing the NBA and European basketball. They're different games, but they're still games. They're played differently, but I think they're still part of the game. So from my perspective, to have 95,000 people that come, no, watching a football game of women, just that tells you something. Tells you that there is, business, there is a as they call market fit, if you will. There is a market fit. And I think the same way there is a fit for the women's game, there's a fit for the men's game, and there's also fit for celebrity games and things like the Kings League. That not necessarily you have stars, but it's the culture of playing the game. And people, I think we have gone beyond what it's a game to go. People want to see entertainment, and if they are entertained by the women's game or by the men's or seeing celebrities play football, at the end of the day, they're all embracing the beautiful game. So why not? I think we're all winning at the end. I don't, and one thing which I think it's even more interesting is that you have women now taking the role of the men's game. And I think that's fascinating of how you have, women officiating men's games on the professional side. And you have even women running for office of federations, leading federations, having, and I think that speaks a lot of how far we have gone in the game. It's not about it's a men's game or it's a woman's game. It's a game. It's entertainment. So, you have startups, investment groups that strictly are focusing on the women's game. Like Mercury 13, that's their focus because they see a market fit. So, I think this is such a, football is played the number two game on the global scale. And that allows opportunity on all levels. So I think rather, I think we all need to embrace it because if we love the game, it doesn't matter. It's almost like watching movies. It doesn't matter what type of movie. If you love movies, you will always enjoy. And that's I think that should be the approach.
Absolutely, and it's growing that way. So it's amazing. Your achievements, including securing major partnerships resulting in significant year-over-year growth and additional activation sales. Could you walk us through a specific example of how you orchestrated a partnership that led to such an impressive result, detailing the strategic decisions and engagements that were pivotal to its success?
That's a great question. It's funny because I'm going to be talking to somebody today who's in Malaysia, who was part of my, I always say this. The very first partnership was the most difficult one and the most endearing one, and the one that really gave me a lot to be thankful for, and it really taught me a lot. And I'll share with you a little bit. And it had to do with professional basketball. And it was at the beginning of my career when I was at this company that we needed to do something to really change perception of the market. And we thought that through sports, we could do that. So one of the things we couldn't do at the time, we couldn't do football because, it was too polarizing. So we tried to find something that had the same popularity, had this they share our values, was innovative, was forward thinking, that we could do the kind of things that we wanted to do. So we found in professional basketball that tool, and we found an organization at the time that sort of aligned with us on what we wanted to do. We kind of both needed something from each other, so we were able to align our forces. And what we did is not only, it's funny because not only you have to put the money on the table, right? You have to think of what you're going to do next. So that next was just as important as what we did then. It was not because of the nature of our business. We were in direct marketing at the time. We were a multinational of direct marketing, billion-dollar business that we did not do things on TV. We were direct to consumer sort of thing. So we meticulously plan activation campaigns throughout the year that they ensure that they resonated with our global audience. And going back to what I was telling you, that the vast majority of the fans or people who identified with our goals, our culture, some of them never stepped on the court to watch a basketball game. So what we did is we utilized the players as brand ambassadors. So every city that they went, it created an opportunity to create community. We go back to my beginnings, that it's create community and ensure that the entire organization, being brand ambassadors, they understood what we were all about, embraced that, and the results were incredible. We did our brand recognition went threefold, 300%. We had declining sales that we were able to turn them around, stabilize the sales, and really improve on that branding of the company to really have a better acceptance by the global market. So even though, there's studies that say that 65% of fans don't even know what your brand is all about, what I did is we took a step forward because we took it directly to the fans and tell them exactly what it was, explain to them having things from pre-game fairs for people to see. So a lot of things that I see today around football, we were doing it, or even American football, we were doing it 20 years ago. So this success was a result of having a strategic alignment, right? Creative marketing, if you will, think outside of the box, and ensuring that every game was a new story, as I said at the beginning, and that the fan was the storyteller and had a unique experience. And that's because every game is different. So it allows you to create a story. And that's, I think, what made us successful.
For sure. Storytelling is super important. And activations are so interesting. Anytime I ever go to an event, I always like to look at like the branding, the marketing, where they're putting certain activations and I've seen it at SoccerX in Miami in November at United Soccer Coaches Convention. So it's really nice to see events and how they put it together. With saying that, so Stuart, with Real Madrid's North American emerging market fan strategy, which you spearheaded, relied on data analysts to inform decision making and deliver competitive activations. Can you share how data-driven insights influenced the direction of the strategy, and what challenges did you encounter in adapting it to the North American market?
In order to do that, I think we need to start where Real Madrid is as a whole. And I think it's important. Real Madrid by themselves, and I find it fascinating. It's a club that is not a deep pocket organization. They don't have a tycoon that has a lot of money to spend, believe it or not. They don't have shareholders. They're not a public enterprise. They're a private community-led enterprise. They're a very unique. There's not many of those that are left. It's in the old days. So to stay competitive as they have, they invested close to $1 billion in creating infrastructure. I mean, if you think about the stadium from the ground up, to really have a vision of long-term growth and sustainability that goes beyond the trophies. Because if you stop winning, if you don't win one year, like it can happen. I mean, no club in the history of football in Europe has had the amount of success that they have. If you look at the Champions League alone, they have 14 trophies and the rest of them have 13. So and I think the vision of where the game is going, more of an entertainment as opposed to a sport, they had to make some changes. So they invested into new infrastructure all the way, from the new stadium, the grass. They also invested in not only in a physical but also in a digital structure that allow for direct fan engagement. And this is where North America comes in, because as you are trying to roll this out, North America being a focus point of everybody, because it is the most important market for Real Madrid, that's where we came. And we had a meeting 2 years ago where they realized how engaged we were and how important we were. And if you think about it, if you look at North America, we are the region with the most clubs out of everybody, where we have close to, I think, 30 clubs, fan clubs, from Toronto all the way to Mexico City. So, it created an opportunity for to be part of that relaunch, re-engagement of what I call, or what the club calls, the Madridista community. So as they push for new initiatives, we said to them, I think we need to partner, and you need to put those initiatives so we can be your beta and we can provide real data on what you want to do. So what going back with that storytelling, it allows you to create storytelling and to allows you to do fan interaction in a way utilizing data. Because if you think about it, during the pandemic in the United States, while the team was playing closed doors, we were having virtual watch parties among all the fans, where we all would be joined together and we would be watching the team, 300 and 500 people out of their home, but we try to unite it. So that kind of behavior and that kind of it allowed them to understand what fan was all about, what needs they had, push data, and if they wanted to do things that allow them to push new initiatives to ensure that always everything was relevant, engaging. Some of the challenges were the diverse cultural backgrounds. I mean, in North America, it's not only about pushing in English, it's also about pushing information in Spanish. Make sure that everybody's engaged. So it allows you a two-way information of data. And what we did is really help them understand, so that when they push things to the community, it really resonated with the local interests, what the fans, fans they want to see what they want to see, and they're very particular about what they want to see. It's proven that this is why, like you only want to see 15 minutes, of a game, and then the most important thing. So to make sure that they're always engaged and meet those digital goals and always pushing new things, pushing new things. If I have to say this, provide a unified digital fan identity rooted by real data information that you can, and that was one of the biggest challenges. How do we merge databases? How do we not meet criteria of privacy? There's so many things to think about that until you start pushing the envelope, you don't realize.
Yeah, no, that's so interesting that you end off with that, because you can only plan for so much, and then when you start doing it, you're like, oh, I didn't plan for that, but okay, we gotta pivot here, we gotta fix that, or we gotta change that. Very true. And Again, really focusing on fans back 2020 COVID for the last for 2 years to 2022 per se. With no fans in the stadium, the game wasn't the same. Fans are the heartbeat of the game. It definitely affected players. Fans weren't able to go to the fields, and it just really changed. So it really go COVID really highlighted how important fans are to the game, and creating that atmosphere, the sounds, the reactions, the stories, everything. We need the fans. And to close off here, coming towards the end, I have this last question. Leveraging your fluency in multi-languages and your experience in global market growth and integration, what strategies have you found most effective in driving brand awareness and revenue across different regions? And how do you ensure consistency while adapting to local market dynamics and consumer behaviors?
This is a great question, and I will go, I have to take what Real Madrid is doing on the global scales. I mean, they have 700 million fans across the globe in different platforms. So I think the most important thing is, and something they've done in the last year, which I think is so important and so engaging, is to really engage fans in their local languages by bringing in people like Roberto Carlos and Vinicius that talking to somebody who's in a favela in Rio and talking in their own languages and telling what Real Madrid is all about. It's so powerful because it brings it to their level, and it allows them to really touch with them and integrate local cultures, tradition, and fan insights into that, something that resonates with each audience. I think that is very powerful. As I said before, me as somebody who understood the importance of culture in a game that doesn't need to, you don't need to speak, but when somebody speaks to you in their language, it's just truly resonate, and it brings qualities about Real Madrid. And even if you had, I would say, Vinicius speaking in Arabic, the fact that he speaks in Arabic and the fact that tells you Salam Alaikum, it's so vital because it just brings it up to your level. I think that's so powerful. That's number one. And another thing is that we participated in, and which I think it's also very important, is to bring the fan into that journey and to have the fan tell the story, and they become the story. And one of the things they've done and they're doing is Universo Real, in Universo Madrid, where they go to different areas of the world, Brazil, Mexico, United States, France, UK, and to grab fans and to understand how they live their passion, not only for the team, but for the game. I think it's so powerful. It just when you bring it down to the culture and to the level, it just creates powerful pieces of energy. And again, going back to what I said, remember, every game is a story, and the fan is the storyteller. And that's a unique experience that has so much value.
Amazing. I think we'll end it off right there, Stuart. Before we go, where can the viewers and listeners connect with you?
Well, you always follow us on social media. If you look at Real Madrid Los Angeles, just type in Real Madrid Los Angeles, you're going to find us. Our social media team is very engaged, and if you send a message, somebody for sure will respond. So I'm all about the game. I'm all about meeting people, and it's all about creating, as I said before, a unique story with each game.
Amazing. Well, Stuart, thank you so much for taking the time for being on the One Soccer Nation podcast today.
Thank you. And I said, as I said before, congratulations. This is a wonderful platform that makes the game so beautiful because it allows you to talk about what we love the most, which is football.
Thank you so much, Stuart.
Thank you.